Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show for Saturday, September 15, 2012. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. And our topic for today is Stop Obama's Haiti Treatment of Haiti and the World. Get him out of power now. Now, we have two guests for discussing this for the hour, and we're very glad to welcome from Montreal, Jean-Philippe Leblou. Hi, Jean-Philippe.
Hello, Marcia.
And people will have heard him on this show or know about him otherwise, that Jean-Philippe is a leader of the Committee for the Republic of Canada. But as you will hear in our discussion, for quite some time in the last 18 months or much longer, he has been collaborating with leaders in Haiti on the situation there and the world at large in part of our international effort to stop this deadly policy that's gripping things out of the White House and in London. Now, I'm glad to have here live with me in the studio, Cynthia Rush. Welcome, Cynthia.
Thank you. Hi.
And Cynthia is writes regularly for EIR Online on Ibero-America. I know she has a special interest in history of the Americas and a special interest and devotion to Haiti in particular. And I think, Cynthia, you spent some part of your life growing up in Uruguay? Or
Argentina.
Argentina.
Yes.
Okay. So Cynthia is, we're glad to have her here today. And before we ask her to open the discussion, because our hour will very much focus on particulars and concepts relating to Haiti, but our focus in scheduling this for today is that our focus is on the consequences of allowing Obama to stay in office. And that's our task here in this country in particular, to see that that doesn't continue. Obama's own pathology, the self-centered psyche he has, narcissist personality, makes him a perfect man for the job, that he doesn't react to reality, as we've seen so starkly in Haiti or other things around the world. So he's a tool of people who vetted and supported him getting in office here in the United States, of the British imperial, I mean empire, not English people, interests behind the certain financial networks that go back decades and actually originate centuries ago, that are see their interest in suppressing nations and suppressing science and development. And meantime, they've been perpetrating looting and with their globalist system and kind of monetarist system instead of development-based system. So we are in a situation where you see this in certain events of the last few days. This system, which was based, the kind of world casino system of the last 50 years, based on speculation and swindles, it's expiring of its own rotten nature. And in the last 72 hours, we had an announcement by the Federal Reserve Bank, Ben Bernanke, here in the United States, of more all-out bailout, and of the European Central Bank head on Thursday, Mario Draghi, announced the same thing. So we have transatlantic hyperinflation promoted as the policy of the moment before the elections here in the United States. So we're at a great moment of danger. And it isn't just in general because of the economic spiraling down, but these kinds of evil interests are conducting war bluffs of great danger with Russia and China over the cockpit in the Middle East. You know about Syria, about potential attack on Iran by Israel. But in fact, this is our own efforts it's against this kind of war danger that we've been focusing, as those of you who regularly listen to this show know. And we've been working in tandem with certain military leaders and institutions in the United States and elsewhere who are trying to push back against the war. I'll just say, look on the latest EIR Online posted and the one coming next week. There have been diplomatic circles likewise, retired Foreign Service and other people in the United States that have, it was on Thursday, that would be September 13th, issued a statement pushing back against any kind of crazed assault on Iran. So you have this process underway, but we, and it's focused very much in Congress, who came back in session, although they are dysfunctional over these, for a variety of reasons of being dumbed down and ultra party fixated people. But there are singular individuals like Representative Walter Jones and others who've put in House of Representatives concurrent resolution number 107 to warn the presidency, warn Barack Obama not to unilaterally deploy military commitments without checking with Congress, or this is grounds for impeachment. And that just brings me to this major point. I'm saying this last, but look at what happened in this last week in Libya with the loss of the diplomats, the ambassador, Christopher Stevens, another diplomat, four Americans killed, and you have waves of terrorism and riots taking place. A policy under Obama in action. Under his presidency, in recent weeks and months, there were particular acts of negligence and committed acts as well as omission in the way of security in Benghazi. 2 weeks ago, there was for which this is impeachable. I won't summarize them here. That's not our topic. But remember, it was 2 weeks ago there was a travel restriction placed on any Americans going to Libya. But yet the Benghazi embassy of the United States was not secured. It didn't have protection there. 2 days in advance of this attack that then in which people were killed, there was notice given, and there wasn't any action taken. Now, and there are many more particulars about this, but what this all adds up to is that this is grounds for bringing impeachment action, and this is not just secondary or something. This is a reflection of what the presidency is about, and it's urgent because since we've had the renomination of Obama, that any opposition was put down. If we have the re-election, we are headed on a doomsday track. So one way to look at it is, as Mr. LaRouche said, briefing staff this morning, remember, 11 years ago, we had September 11, 2001, that attack. And that was very much connected to the Anglo-Saudi networks working in terrorism and infiltrating in the United States and elsewhere. What you've seen in Libya is 9/11 number two. The wave of terrorism is connected to the same networks, and we have to act against this. So let me just say about this, I hope everyone looked at Mr. LaRouche's evaluation that was given on his 90th birthday. That was last Sunday. It was September 9th. His birthday was the 8th. But he gave a major world kind of strategic evaluation. It will be in print in the upcoming EIR online, the one that will be dated September 21st. And it's available on LaRouchePack.com right now. You can see it on video. And so with that kind of situating of why we definitely want to discuss and hone in on what's happening in Haiti, but from that point of view is that this must be stopped. This is absolutely intolerable. So, Cynthia, let me ask you to just begin with some synopsis there and to begin the discussion.
Sure. Let me also just give a little bit of a historical perspective as well. But, you know, looking at Haiti today, 2.5 years after the January 12th, 2010 earthquake in which close to 300,000 people were killed, and you look at it today in a situation of just utter devastation, in which all of the key elements that should have been addressed in terms of building infrastructure, emergency housing, water systems, water management, clean water, etc., housing, none of this has been done. And the only conclusion you can draw from that you know, technically the population is 10 million people. Who knows whether that figure still is the case, because you've had people who died in droves in very remote, isolated areas of the country from cholera, largely, in which you have no way of even registering death rates. But the only conclusion you draw from looking at this is that, as Mr. LaRouche has said, you know, this is a policy of deliberate genocide. And this is the British imperial policy of population reduction. And it certainly never had to be that way. I would just draw your attention to a quote that what Mr. LaRouche said. This was at the end of January of 2010, where he said, if we don't act, Haiti will soon face conditions in which dengue, cholera, malaria, typhoid, and other epidemics will spread with devastating consequences. And this is the key point he makes. Haiti is the image of what awaits all of humanity under the current British imperial international financial system. It's the face of the new dark age. We must stop it in Haiti if we are to have the moral fitness to survive on this planet. And he had, of course, at that time laid out a very significant program of what the United States had to do at that point to draw up a 25-year treaty with Haiti, to which he said, we have a historical responsibility. Haiti is a country to which we have had historical ties. We were present at Haiti's revolution in 1804. Alexander Hamilton helped to draft the Haitian Constitution and had significant input in other areas of their, you know, as their government was being created. We've had ties with Haiti that haven't always been very positive. We've had some ties with people like Franklin Roosevelt, Abraham Lincoln, who had a sense of Haiti as a country with great potential, whose sovereignty must be respected. And of course, that was the point that Lyndon LaRouche made. We must draw up a treaty where Haiti's sovereignty is the essential item, where we must work with Haiti. We can obviously input all sorts of emergency possibilities, Army Corps of Engineers. We can build the kind of housing, as you, Marcia, wrote in the article in early March of 2010, where we put together an emergency program, how you could actually rebuild Haiti with things like a civilian conservation corps, such as Roosevelt had proposed, those kinds of things, which are absolutely doable. So none of this has been done. Cholera continues to be rage in the middle of rainy season. You can continue to have officially 400,000 people still living in these horrendous tent cities in the capital with no sanitation, no clean water. Every time it rains, or, you know, we recently had the tropical storm Isaac, which killed 24 people, flooding, you know, excrement floating in the water. Cholera, again, surging in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. So the only conclusion from all of this is the British imperial policy. And LaRouche said very, very clearly in late January, early February of 2010, we can rebuild Haiti. The sane policy exists. We know that Obama rejected his proposals. Some other very, you know, competent experts proposed something similar. Obama rejected it and instead left this whole process in the hands of so-called humanitarian agencies, such as USAID, the United Nations, and a whole, you know, thousands and thousands of non-governmental organizations competing with each other. No money went to the Haitian government. It was completely bypassed and sidestepped because it was supposedly too corrupt. It's as if the government doesn't exist, and in fact it has no budget or anything else to be able to do the things that you know, one government would have to take care of. So again, this is a policy of deliberate genocide, And LaRouche also made the key point that we all have to keep in mind. He said, this will come back to haunt us. This will come back. The same policy will affect the people of the United States, which simply underscores, and of course we see the devastation in our own country, the absolute urgency of getting Obama out.
Right. Well, Jean-Philippe, you can say here the activities you've been collaborating with directly with people in Haiti.
Yeah, because it's important to remind people that after the earthquake of Haiti, the international community gave two choices to Haiti. They said whether nothing is going to happen, whether we're going to leave it, we're going to leave Haiti the way it is, totally destroyed, with Port-au-Prince being not just the capital, but it's really the intellectual and political center of the country. So if that city is blocked or it's paralyzed because of human inactions or pretty much moral corruption from the international community, well, the whole country is in total despair. So it's very bad. So that was the first choice. But the second choice, which was offered to Haiti from people like Paul Collier, who is a self-acclaimed British economist expert about Haiti, and he was part of a group of people saying, well, we're going to transform Haiti into basically the new China for the United States. So whether you would stay in your filth or would give you a cheap, you know, quasi-slaver job, slave labor job, you know, to try to cope, you know, would forbid big machines to clean up Port-au-Prince. Everything would be done by hands with hammers and, you know, cheap gloves, so it would create more jobs. And that kind of crazy debate. And so our intervention with the LaRouche movement, which started really with by using all the different declarations by Lynn regarding Haiti after the earthquakes, which came, I think the first one was in February of 2010 during a webcast, where LaRouche talks about what should really occur in Haiti, what kind of development should occur for, you know, for the second republic of the Americas. So from there, myself and other people in Houston and Leesburg, we were involved in not so regular discussions with people in Haiti. We had a lot of radio shows we participated into until November 2010, where we had a conference in Cap Haïtien with 2,500 people who came in to listen to a presentation I gave on pretty much LaRouche's 3 points of, you know, Glass-Steagall, national banking, and the WAPA, which we transform into something more Haitian, as I'll say a few words at the end. And we also had Elgut Zep LaRouche, who participated with a very important memo on a on the Frederick Douglass operation for Haiti, which is obviously not just to clean up the mess, but which is to make Haiti a strong and proud republic over the coming years to come. And the other major intervention was after the tsunami in Fukushima, Japan, where one of our friends, Peter Martinson, in the LaRouche-backed basement, made a video called The Rim of Fire. That video was translated in French, and we played it in many, many gatherings, mostly religious gatherings where people in Cap Haïtien would just come out, you know, come out in the streets. There were like thousands of people in the street, and we were able to play on a projector that video and the following ones that came later. And that became an instant hit. Everybody wanted to know about that. Everybody wanted to get a sense of how these earthquake works, was the solar the solar or galactic influences on the earth. And this is a video that even months after it came out, people still wanted to watch. So and near February 2012, this is when we had a radio show three times a week, a radio show called the LaRouche Revolution, that played in five departments out of 10, so the five northern departments of Haiti, which played three times a week. And we had, you know, we had different guests like Keisha Rogers from Houston. We had at least once a week, we would go through some kind of a rough shortened translation of the LaRouche Weekly Report on, you know, on science and economic development, plus many, many interventions in the population with leaflets on Glass-Steagall. And to tell you the truth, I think the what had the most impact, was besides the things regarding the earthquakes, was really our attacks on Obama. Because that's how we started. When we started the radio show, we just went on and on about what really Obama represents, because it's important to tell our American listeners that when Obama was elected, people in Haiti thought, this is our president. He's black. He's our president. And obviously, he let everybody down in Haiti after this earthquake, and still today with the Isaiah storm hitting Haiti. So we really exposed everything Obama represented, everything Lynn said about Obama's narcissistic personality, his action to drive for a world war, that we really covered, you know, over the last few months. And at the same time we did that, we said, well, look, here's the real situation. Here's what Haiti should be working for, so that Haiti becomes at some point a factor of change for the whole world, not simply a nation that needs help, but a nation that can actually help other countries. And I would just finish by saying that in order to do that, one thing we've been using is what Roosevelt helped develop, which is the La Peligre region, pretty much in the center of Haiti, where you have this big lake with these different rivers connected to it, which was developed as a hydroelectric production center and also an agricultural center. Today there's been some money given to Haiti to rebuild to reconstruct the power turbines, mm-hmm. which are like super old and in a very bad condition. So like something like $30 million was attributed by the bank of Latin America, the Bank of Development from Latino America, mm-hmm. but obviously we said, well, that's far from enough, because that just rebuilding something that was there like, you know, like 50 years ago. What you need is something other. And we've been using, talking about a project that was proposed by an engineering firm called SNC-Lavalin from Quebec, which, and we don't have too much of the details, but we were told by people from SNC-Lavalin that this is a project that could go up to double or triple the hydroelectricity production, and double and triple the agricultural production. And it would even involve the Dominican Republic, because it's such a wide project. So we've been using that as an example of a kind of a Nawapa-like project. We have a project that can become the center of a total reorganization of the country, involving, you know, roads to bring the food outside, you know, to connect all those isolated areas, to also have universities, right? Because when you have these kind of dams, you need the know-how, you need the engineers, you need to produce those engineers. So today, I'm sorry, not today, but since Thursday this week, our friend over there, our member, Charles Luxon, has been invited for a conference in Port-au-Prince after he made an intervention in Cap-Haïtien, where he spoke at an event where they were inaugurating a touristic road in the region called the Acule du Nord. So he went there to talk about LaRouche, about our projects, Nawapa, get rid of Obama. And then he was invited by one of the parliamentarians over there to go down to Port-au-Prince and to give a short 15-minute presentation on his ideas in front of not just a big crowd, but many national television shows, radio shows were there. He started by talking about the situation with the war, the world economic crisis. He brought up something that we've covered here at EIR, the declaration by Haiti Defense Minister Jean-Rodolphe Joisil about the necessity to bring the army into a more of an engineer scientific approach to really help the population, not simply a bunch of guys with guns, but people are able to build and rebuild, especially. And then he went on about, this idea of how we can rebuild La Pilgue region, because that's why everybody was gathered there to discuss about the different potentials. And obviously, none of them really had an overview, like an international overview of what's going on. So Charles was obviously very busy that day to talk with people. And on Friday, he also had two very important meetings with what's called the Youth Bureau, which is an institution under the guidance of the Prime Minister of Haiti, where pretty much youth are getting involved in decision-making for the country. So he was able to address first the group of students, and then he was invited to discuss with different parliamentarians of the region about our ideas. And today again, he's going to meet with another block of parliamentarians to discuss LaRouche's idea and pretty much how to get things going, because obviously it's not just for Haiti. Haiti must be given a break. That's why you need the United States. You need a healthy United States and a healthy international community to start getting things done in that region. And I think, just maybe to conclude, our intervention there is really based on the same kind of ideas that we've been covering everywhere. So when you talk to somebody in Haiti, he doesn't want to hear about the details of how we're going to clean up Port-au-Prince. That's one thing, but we got to get him into the science of physical economy, get him into, in Cap-Haïtien, it's very hard to get a book, right? So to get a mere book is a challenge. So our radio show is extremely important for that reason, where we can go into, the greatest ideas that help build a nation state, get people a sense of really this idea of credit from Alexander Hamilton, the idea of physical economy by LaRouche, and going to philosophy, science, and get people a sense of how you really build a nation and how you really get out of a mess, which is with the mind, not simply with both your hands, but it's really how you can use your brain to make discoveries and get the nation back in the right kind of direction.
Jean-Philippe, are we still doing the radio show 3 times a week?
Yeah, we still are.
Okay. I just wanted to mention one funny, instructional anecdote about Paul Collier, who you mentioned.
Okay.
Because we first ran into him in 1997 when Helga Zepp LaRouche was giving a conference in Nigeria. In November of that year, she had just come back from China and was laying out the whole perspective for the development of Africa, with advanced technology, nuclear energy, etc. And Paul Collier was there in the conference on the same panel. And after Helga spoke, he went completely nuts. he departed from his text, and he issued a warning to the audience about how they should beware the charlatans who are peddling prosperity. And then he left the conference. So we have a lot of experience with him. And as you said, his policy is slave labor. Don't spend any money. Don't invest in technology. And he's the big fan of this insane project that's being touted as the reconstruction gem for Haiti, which is a sweatshop that's being built on the northern coast. It's called Caracol, run by a South Korean company. It's slave labor. And, of course, these are the maquiladora model that we've seen throughout Southeast Asia and Central America, which have absolutely no benefit to the economy of the countries in which they're located. They complain that $3 a day is too high a salary. A little bit of infrastructure only so that the so-called industrial plan, which is a misnomer, can function. But he's completely rabid in terms of enslavement is the policy of it's the British Empire policy.
Yeah, and it's there. The way it works is so, especially in a situation like now where you can easily manipulate people through their pessimism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you offer them nothing or cheap labor, obviously they'll go for cheap labor. But there's also a big problem of drugs right now in Haiti, where Haiti has become another step for cocaine proliferation in the Americas. And to give an idea, in 2004, 75% of the cocaine intercepted at the Montreal port in Canada, 75% of it came from Haiti.
Wow.
So, right, so then again, you know, what kind of future is there for Haiti if it's not to totally break free from the rules of the actual game and to really go towards real prosperity, real development?
Wow. Right, and in the situation with food, everything you say is perfectly clear. I just throw in one other instance that was so striking. In that first 6 months, just before cholera had broken out, we're talking about 2010, after the earthquake, when Army Corps of Engineers and other people went to the White House a few weeks after the earthquake and said, we have a program we could go in and build, and Obama said, no, we're not going to move people to high ground. We're not going to do this. Okay, fine. So, fine, meaning that's what he prevailed and shouldn't. But the head of the USAID, which Obama appointed from this world of Paul Collier, in fact, his name is Dr. Rajiv Shah. He's an American. He heads the U.S. Agency for International Development. But he worked for 8 years for Bill Gates, specializing in these enslavement policies in Africa. So anyway, Dr. Rajiv Shah said, for food for Haiti, we'll specialize, we're going to fund partnerships. And the first one that opened up just before cholera was announced was a partnership that Coca-Cola and mango growers in Haiti would get together, and USAID money was spent on helping create gathering point warehouses for mangoes to then be exported for Obama to sell mango drink in North America, and this was called Success. Now, we could go on and on, but I just want to say, this dialogue you mentioned, Jean-Philippe, not dialogue, but this engagement you and colleagues are doing is so vital, and so we're doing that the world over. I want to tell listeners to do everything to realize what you're a part of. In mid-August, there was a world meeting. It's called World Water Week, of people from the Americas and Africa and elsewhere, and our people in Stockholm, in Sweden, where the event was held, went for several days, and they went to the Africa Day, and they confronted just what we're saying. They confronted this policy as it was being promoted for Africa, with great success in engaging more people and alienating the Paul Colliers who were present, the Rajiv Shah, the USAID. They made a lot of enemies and gained a lot of friends, because it's so extreme, isn't it? It's, as Cynthia led off with, it's life or death, because disease is spreading, or we change it. So the one thing is there are many things to follow up what you're just saying. The historical precedents referred to here, you want to go back to, in particular, FDR and Henry Wallace in the entire Central American and Caribbean area? Cynthia?
Well, sure. Actually, what you were mentioning, Jean-Philippe, about the Artibonite, correct my pronunciation if I'm massacring the words here, but
okay.
Or the Peligre Dam hydroelectric project. And Henry Wallace, who was FDR's vice president in 1942, set up the Inter-American Institute of Agricultural Sciences, which was based in Costa Rica. Which did some extremely important work dealing with the potential for development in agriculture and industrialization throughout Central and South America. But it put out this very beautiful program, which actually came out in, I believe, 1952, which was the Artibonite Agricultural Development Program. For the valley, the Artibonite Valley, which is the richest rice-producing region of Haiti. And this was, it was referred to as a little TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, and was also referred to as the Valley of Hope, because it would have, and in fact did to a certain extent, it was for land reclamation, flood control, controlling erosion, the building of the hydroelectric, the dam, which created a lake, and it was to have allowed a vast increase in rice production. But also, interestingly, it was also the people who were put together the program emphasized that industrialization was also a key aspect or would be one of the benefits of this program. And Haiti had actually had a Artibonite Valley Development Authority that had been working for a number of years before this was actually put together. So Wallace's Institute worked very closely with it. And, of course, the Army Corps of Engineers, as I think Marcia has documented, was actually involved in Haiti in the 1930s on this exact project for building the Peligre Dam. But one of the architects of this program who said, you know, because also they're talking about having a ready supply of electrical energy, which Haiti still does not have today. When the dam was first put into place, I think it was generating 54 megawatts of electrical energy. Today, Haiti's total installed capacity, I think, is 200 megawatts, but the demand is double that, or 2.5 times that. And, you know, even the capital still doesn't have a ready supply of energy. But the focus of this was industrialization, the defense of the welfare of the Haitian people. And, of course, FDR, who was the first American president to ever set foot on Haitian soil, has some very beautiful remarks about Haiti's potential as a nation. Its capability, a potential for producing its own food supply, which of course it did up until the late 1980s and early 1990s when they imposed this drastic free trade, which completely wiped out their rice producing capability and for other foods as well. But he said Haiti is one of the most beautiful countries in the world. It has everything above the ground and everything under the ground. It could produce anything that it wants to produce. And he said, when I die, I think Haiti is going to be written on my heart, because for all these years, I've had the most intense interest in the Republic of Haiti. He specifically mentioned, we have to help them to be self-sustaining and grow more of their own food. It will help them. And we can have, he said, he talked about a new civilization that we're going to come to of mutual aid in a cooperative management between all the nations of the world. And I think that not only can Haiti learn a lot from us, but we can learn a lot from Haiti. So, I mean, this is exactly what Lyndon LaRouche has been talking about in terms of respecting this wonderful country, which has actually shown enormous resilience in the midst of this terrible tragedy. So
I think it's good to keep in mind that the British Empire really hates sovereign nation states.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, they're still pissed at Haiti for doing what they did, not just a republic, but even a republic of former slaves.
Yes.
That's one slap in the face.
Exactly.
And today, I remember in May 2011, we had a conference here in Montreal organized by a Haitian radio, and the mayor of Port-au-Prince was there. And he reminded people that the international community had given something like $14 billion, which he hadn't seen yet. But he says, look, if a city like San Francisco had been hit by the same kind of earthquake, you would need like $500 billion to rebuild it. And now you're looking at Haiti, they're giving us peanuts, really. So the Haitians are demanding a real future. They don't want that crappy stuff that cheap labor people get. They want to be a real nation. They have a national pride. So then the ideas of LaRouche, once you start inseminating those ideas in the population, it quickly gets, you know, the population gets on fire and they want to see clear results. And I think this is where we can be very helpful in terms of re-promoting the idea of a strong government in Haiti, because, you know, sometimes your government is screwed up and you think like you're going to just rebuild your little local or your little region, which is an idea being spread in Haiti. We're going to have local agriculture. We're going to have peasants in charge of their little region. And obviously they're put themselves in a position where they can be totally destroyed by a conglomerate like Coca-Cola, or, you know, by any kind of big consortium that's bigger than the region itself. So we really have to bring back this idea of national planning, a bit like what De Gaulle or Roosevelt has been doing, and really get things moving so you can have, so you can actually see the energy demand, you know, triple, quadruple in a very short amount of time. So you'll bring in nuclear power. Also, I think it's relevant to say that in the 1990s, Haiti, the government of Haiti managed to have a kind of a first map out of the different mining potential in Haiti, you know, where is iron, where is copper, where is gold, and they had a map of the whole country. This, obviously, nothing has been done about that. There's probably more updates to do. But that, then again, you give another incentive for development and things that can be used for internal development, but at the same time, making sure that the whole Caribbean region, South America, and the whole world gets out of this crisis at the same time. So from that standpoint, the ideas of LaRouche are, you can't really avoid them. You got to go with them.
Right. When one talks about North American Water and Power Lines 21, or in Africa, re-diverting some of the huge Congo flow to where it's needed in the dry basin of the Chad or something, I was thinking of the Caribbean Sea archipelago, the Greater Antilles, the Lesser Antilles. I mean, there, without even counting the isthmus of Central America, you have, what, 230 million people in the archipelago in which Haiti's a part. And yet one is presented, as you both have been saying, with the idea, we'll grow some mangoes for Coca-Cola here, do some cheap garment work, and then up in north have a base where the cruise ships can stop. And that's supposed to be called a nation. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. It's incredibly clear. I'm not shocked at the British Empire, excuse me. But it's very dramatic. And the other thing is, you both alluded to the two things that are part of a challenge of our planet in the midst of the galaxy, the solar system, and then the galaxy. This is the tropical belt where the storms arise, right? And it's on this, what they call the Caribbean tectonic plate, I believe. Right. And so those are challenges for all people of goodwill around the world, right? I mean, it's not...
Well, we have a situation right now. Well, first of all, many seismologists and geologists have predicted that the likelihood of another major earthquake in Haiti relatively soon is quite possible. You also now have volcanoes erupting throughout Central America, Guatemala, Nicaragua, affecting largely indigenous populations that live around those areas. And we had 33,000 people that had to be evacuated in Guatemala a couple of days ago.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And which simply underscores the necessity of our engaging in the policies that will allow us to deal with these galactic forces before, you know, we have another catastrophe.
Yeah, nothing is in one isolated place.
No.
I mean, that's not the way anything works. Certainly the universe is not. Let me ask either one of you, if you want to, in the final quarter here, I want you to make any special points you want, but the history, as it was alluded to, or Jean-Philippe, you said, in the British Empire mind and types, the evil types, especially don't like an upstart place that has a history of being against slavery. Do either one of you could you just summarize that, maybe, Cynthia?
Well, I mean, as Jean-Philippe said, this was the first, after the United States, the revolution, or American Revolution, this was the second republic created in the Americas. And furthermore, it was a black republic, right, of former slaves, which from the standpoint of not just the British, but the French and the Spanish empires, this was not exactly what they wanted to have happen. Unfortunately, we had people like Thomas Jefferson, who at one point offered to help the British and the French contain the pest of the Negro population in Haiti. And we've had actually throughout since, I mean, Haiti has been subjected to some really horrific policies in the course of its history, as Lynn said, has said repeatedly. And we owe them a debt. We have a debt with them, a moral debt and a moral responsibility, not from the standpoint of, oh, we're going to help you poor people, but we can collaborate with them in the way as two sovereign nations, and, you know, as two nation states, to bring this country up to where it has to be. And we should just do it.
Right. And Jean-Philippe, you also mentioned Frederick Douglass. Do you want to say something about that, too?
Well, I mean, to people, according to people I talk to, and also we ask people during our radio show if people knew about Frederick Douglass, it's not very well known what he represented as a force in the United States for not just for the development of Haiti per se, because he was pretty much the ambassador sent. The ambassador for Haiti in the United States in the 1890s, mm-hmm. In the United States. He really represents, humanity. He was a man that started as a slave and then realizes that he was not, because he couldn't read and write like any other white folks. And then he could not go back to his former state of slave. And that's, I think it's a good image for Haiti because, this whole La Pellicule region, and I know that many sections of the government in Haiti are confident, for example, to double food production mm-hmm. in the near future in Haiti, to double at least rice production. So people are not, they're not duped. They just tend to get pessimistic, and they mm-hmm. tend to go along without realizing, what's the real potential. And that's also, I think that's more the modern form of slavery, is a slavery of the mind. So obviously it's our role to break that slavery, to break people free from, sense perception and typical action that you find in a society, and to break that apart and go for an image of the future. And Haiti, like other nations, they're ready for that, and I'm sure they're gonna fight for that because, they're people from a republic, and they fought imperialism, while Canadians were still wearing diapers. it's there. The potential is there. We just have to activate it.
If I could just add one thing there. This question of science that you were discussing earlier, I think, is so crucial. I've seen reports here and there of, university students desperately trying to be able to have classes, and there's no physical location for them to get into, have a classroom, mm-hmm. and sort of struggling but desperately wanting this. And clearly what you've described in terms of our role to introduce these concepts of physical economy and the basement work, et cetera. It's really important to note that, when Woodrow Wilson was president in 1914, aside from sending in the Marines to occupy them up until 1934, a whole slew of anthropologists and sociologist and others were sent into Haiti, where you to develop this artificial culture, if you want to call it culture, of voodoo and witchcraft, and as if this represented the people of Haiti. USAID in the 1990s and into the 2000s, at the time when Haiti was being blockaded by the Bush administration and not allowed to, you know, get both keep people from leaving Haiti to come into the United States and also to keep anything from going in. USAID was pouring millions of dollars into Haiti to finance and promote the development of Creole, a language which is not spoken anywhere else in the world except Haiti. So it's kind of a form of isolating and saying, okay, this is who you are, this is your culture. The promotion of this voodoo, etc., is a completely artificial and externally imposed culture on Haiti, which was connected to the Duvalier dictatorship as well. This is artificial, it's synthetic, and it doesn't represent the human beings who make up the Haitian population, and we should really address that.
Do you want to say anything on that, Jean-Philippe, or it certainly speaks for itself, and we've seen it elsewhere, but it's...
Yeah, I think it's, I think Creole or any kind of a language today is really used against the population, whether it's different form of slang, you know, that are being imposed, and, I mean, Creole is a... I'm a French speaker, so if I try to learn Creole, which I tried, you quickly realize that most of the words are French. They're just pronounced in a different way, and they're written in a different way. And there are a couple of verbs, but it's very a block language. So it's also I think related to the political and the economic situation of Haiti, where, as I was saying at the beginning, when you have a city like Port-au-Prince, which is totally paralyzed, well, the whole country's intellectual activity will become paralyzed too. And that, and the only way to break from slavery, right, as I said, is the mind. So you got to get the mind going. You need, you know, Haitians to learn like 4, 5, 6 languages, you know, in order that's what you need everywhere. You need people that can actually really master ideas and get into the classical writings, classical music, etc. So obviously, yeah, there's a lot that has to be done in terms of culture. Obviously, that's my point.
Mm-hmm. We still have 8 minutes, and I want either one of you to say what you want to bring out for people to appreciate. But do you want to say more about the development program that you mentioned for Central Haiti, just to give a few specifics about the upgrading or the electricity, the agriculture, the land rehabilitation?
Yeah, because these are things that were being discussed even before the earthquake in 2010. But basically, the problem right now is not that there are no projects on the drawing table. There are plenty of projects. And the one that we're bringing from SNC-Lavalin is much bigger, and it's a binational project involving the Dominican Republic and Haiti, whose aim is pretty much to raise the level of the lake up to a point where the hydroelectricity production will go from 50 to 70 to 250 megawatts. As a total production over the coming years, we're not even talking about $10 billion. It's a very low is a low budget project which could transform the whole region, and at the same time, the whole region of La Pelique, which is an agricultural region, still isolated from the rest of the country. There's lack of road, lack of railroads, etc., and that region could easily sustain an agricultural revolution in Haiti. So that project from SNC-Lavalin we still have to put our hands on the report itself, but the comments that we got over phone are very promising. Now, the problem is, I think that this project is a very good excuse to bring in Haiti the concept of national credit, right? I think a national bank that will emit the credit instead of always depending on some kind of international bank that will give you money depending on how, you know, if they feel sick or not. So that's not really productive. You need a strong government that can have control over the currency. And that can be used after that to really irradiate throughout the country. Because in order to do that project, you'll need mining, you need engineers that, you know, I'm sure a lot of the Haitians from overseas will be able to join in the project to start the project, you know, founding new universities and making sure that what's happening at Port-au-Prince in terms of intellectual activity is happening throughout the country. And you can have really, you know, I mean, having a space program in Haiti at a certain point, you know, you'll need that kind of stuff. So that's a good start as a project. And it would have been done with the actual contributions of the so-called contributions of the international community. But then you got to break the imperial wall between Haiti and the rest of the world.
I think that's where getting rid of Obama comes in.
Yeah. Right?
Because there are certainly people in the U.S. government, we know from what Marcia said earlier in terms of the Corps of Engineers, there are experts, there are water management, and there are some very dedicated people that I've come across, experts of various types, who understand perfectly well what's happening and, you know, are very frustrated at the inability of the United States to do what it should do.
Yeah, one incident comes to mind. Cynthia, I think a year ago you were contacting people. I think you spoke to one of the Army Corps of Engineers persons who was familiar with a recent report studying the lay of the land, literally the watersheds in Haiti, the western part of the island of Hispaniola, and, you know, updating what they did under Eisenhower in the 50s. And he said, but it's not going to happen, Mrs. Rush, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, that's the attitude we're talking about.
Well, it was tremendous pessimism of we can't do this, right? It's not going to happen.
Right. But, you know, Jean-Philippe, before you speaking, you're a patriot of Canada and as well as the world, the Americas and the world at large and Haiti. But I think in the last week, I mean, there's certain moments that happen, but this situation in Libya with the killing of American diplomats, the terrorism, I know from my own experience, I was at a national, it's called the Farm Bill Now rally on Wednesday in Washington, D.C. There were a lot of groups, and people, whatever was being talked at the platform, the people attending there, by the way, they were from near the Canadian border, North Dakota, Minnesota, mm-hmm. Washington State. There was a big California delegation, hundreds of people, and it's harvest time. So everybody did not come in. But they said, yeah, it's the war danger. It's the war. People's minds were changing that we can't go on anymore. We can't afford to be so pessimistic. Not everybody, not mm-hmm. a mass movement, but what do you find in Canada?
Well, the big news in Canada was when Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister, kicked out the U.S. but the Iranian ambassador back to Iran not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
That really opened up people's mind about the war.
Uh-huh.
Because we've been hammering Obama, but you know, like in Europe, you know, Canada has this fetish about Obama,
right?
Which is based on nothing except that, you know, he's black and Democrat, so therefore he's good. But the response has been much better, and we played the documentary Unsurvivable
uh-huh.
In Montreal, and we played it yesterday in Ottawa, and we're also going to play it in the Cap Haïtien in a week or two after El Gazette's webcast.
Yes.
Will occur, I think, in 2 weeks. So, and the responses are very good. There were still some people freaked out about our attacks on Obama, but people are getting the point. But then you got to organize them so that they actually do something about it and not just comment about it on Facebook or whatnot, but they move.
Right. Well, I think this hour has flown by. That is what our task is. I ask everyone. And let me pick up on what you just said. Yes, Helga Zepp LaRouche next Saturday, that's September 22nd, is going to give an international webcast. So I'm saying it's 99% we will, here on the LaRouche Show, be back in 2 weeks, because we will ask everyone to be watching and participating in that that LaRouche webcast. Now, you'll be able to access it. I know the LaRouche Political Action Committee will have it, LaRouchePAC.com. LaRouchePub.com will give you the information. It will start at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, I believe. And I believe she may give it in English, or it may have subtitles in relevant languages if she gives it in German. But that is something for everyone to know about. And for our American listeners right now, I just stress, just because Congress is a mess doesn't mean you don't give them orders. It's just the opposite. They have been in session the last few days. They're to come back. They're trying to hide out and go away, but on the other hand, meaning return to their constituencies and so forth. But go back after them. Redouble every effort, especially the H.R. concurrent resolution. That would mean in the Senate, too. 107 on... that it's impeachable. It's an impeachable act by Obama to be taking steps to deploy military action. And in the meantime, we're going to put out, I'm not talking about writing it, a bill of indictment type. We're going to provide the information on what I said at the beginning about the negligence, the commission and omission of acts by the Obama presidency for this attack to have happened in Libya, which is from the whole policy. It's a consequence of how the White House has been doing this for several years, serving the Anglo-Saudi interests for this terrorism. So I guess that's the end of the show. I have to thank Jean-Philippe Lebleu in Montreal and wish you the best, and please convey it to our friends in Haiti and Cynthia Rush here. Thank you very much. This will end September 15th, 2012, LaRouche Show.